to the Radio Life Sciences Podcast for a behind-the-scenes look into GSLS, made by students and educators for the scientists of tomorrow.
Hello, everyone. My name is Anastasia Kurosheva, and I'm a postdoctoral researcher in the field of higher education, working for the Graduate School of Life Sciences at Utrecht University, connected to the Center of Education and Training at the UMC Utrecht. Today, I will be hosting an episode about the Communication Skills Academy and their particular course, academic writing. I'm very happy to welcome in the studio today two my guests, Aisha and Adam. Could you please introduce yourself and tell us more about your background?
Yes, hi. So my name is Aisha Panyas. I started working for COSCA around 5 months ago in the capacity of a coordinator, so helping not only develop the courses that we are currently teaching, but also ensuring that everything is running smoothly behind the scenes as a coordinator and also as a teacher for one course specifically that we will talk about later. I came to COSCA initially because after I had completed my master's in philosophy, I wanted to move more in the direction of the sciences, actually. What I noticed was that there was a very big gap between two fields of inquiry, philosophy and science, which, according to my perspective, should share quite some common ground and overlap. I found that this was absolutely not the case. Through this divide, I thought that actually there should be quite some more ground for discussion and deliberation and exploration and communication between philosophy and the sciences. So for me, it was kind of a natural consequence to come here, particularly Freudenthal Institute, which is where COSCA is nested in.
Thank you so much. And Adam, what about you? What's your background?
So my name is Adam Frick, and obviously I don't have a Dutch accent. I was born in the United States, but I've spent the last 25 years working as a teacher in some capacity in 8 to 10 different countries. When I moved here, I had already lived in South Africa. I lived in the United Kingdom. I lived in various parts of the United States and in a number of other countries. But it was always in the capacity as a teacher. When I moved to the Netherlands, my lack of Dutch made it impossible for me to teach in secondary schools. And I wanted to expand and work with adults, work with kids, basically to expand the net. I think a good teacher is a helper, a supporter, a facilitator. I found that I could teach not just in classrooms, but also as an editor, as a translator, sometimes as a trainer. The point is that when I learned about U-Learning and COSCA, I had developed more of a very differentiated and variegated concept of what teaching and education is. I also saw that many teaching environments are bureaucratic. I wanted to find more effective ways to serve others. I learned about COSCA and U-Learning, and it seemed like a perfect fit because it's an online environment that has minimal bureaucracy and maximum content. So I now work as a teacher for the U-Learning academic writing course. I've been doing that for about a year, and I look forward to that continuing.
Thank you. That's very impressive, of course, to hear your story. The thought which you expressed about the efficiency of teaching and efficiency in writing, that's exactly what we hear from many students, that they have a need for that. And I would like now to turn back to Aisha to talk about COSCA and what mission does it have, who are in the team, why was it established, and what are the aims?
Thank you for the question. Its beginnings find themselves in 2015 when the center, the GSLS, so the Graduate School for Life Sciences, and the GSNS, the Graduate School for the Natural Sciences, noticed that there was something missing in terms of education when it came to academic writing and academic standards and also academic skills more generally. So we're talking about presentation skills, oral skills, debating skills, so on and so forth. But mainly writing skills. This was something the people involved in these two graduate schools found was missing. And so they came together and tried to steadily fast forward actually to 2021. That's when COSCA is born as a autonomous organization still within Utrecht University that could provide students with the possibility of practicing those very same skills that teachers and professors were seeing were missing in their content and in the development of the students' learning. And so the aim was really to set up an organizational body that could offer courses targeted specifically for students' writing development. And we've, since 2021 now, we've been offering around 20 courses every year.
And what courses are those?
The courses we offer, okay, so maybe it makes sense to first introduce who we offer the courses to and then what the courses are. So we cater specifically to students of the sciences. Our mission is to help science students become better and more effective writers. So we're talking about students that come from the biomedical life sciences, from the natural sciences, and also from medicine. The courses that we are offering are divided into, for now, two different levels. So we have a course set that we're offering to our master's students, and also another set that we offer to PhD students. They go by the same name, the courses.
Of course.
Yeah.
And you're speaking on behalf of COSCA. Could you please very briefly name some of your colleagues?
Yeah, so I think shout-outs, is that something we say?
Shout-outs works, yeah.
Shout-out to Kim. Kim van Omring. She has developed the courses that we're offering on new learning as well. She's praised and well-respected for the work that she's done, you know. I think Adam will also speak to this.
I am very happy to go on record and say that Kim van Omring has developed the best online English content out of anything I've seen in 25 years of education.
So that's that's one member. She's a part of the team, the core team, of course. And there's Frans van Dam, and his expertise is science communication. We then have myself, Aisha Panyas. I'm the coordinator. Then we have our lovely pool of freelancers. Adam Frick sitting here on my left. We have Michelle Marx. Marx is actually not her real surname, but it's a nice addition that she's given to her name. It's a pun. You know?
I didn't know that that
Michelle
was
Marx.
Her real surname.
She marks the...
Wow.
Yeah, that's...
I actually thought that was her real name. I'm impressed doubly that she pulled that off without anybody... Well, I didn't notice.
So Michelle Marx, Taylor Cron, she's also a senior freelancer of ours. Then we've got Patrick Moore. And then we have Libusa van de Pavert. So it's a small team of dedicated, passionate people, and we're looking to expand. And it's interesting that most of our freelancers come from the humanities.
Why is it interesting? I could have imagined this, actually.
Well, you would say that perhaps having freelancers that have a background in the sciences is ideal. However, I think you are writing effectively and clearly and precisely when somebody that is not from your own field of expertise can understand you, relatively. And so to be able to edit at a structural level rather than at a level of content, I think is the best that we can offer, because then we're not biased or we're not using previous knowledge in order to help the student get to where they want to get to, but actually we're just simply looking at the structure of their writing and how they're writing.
And let's turn now to the main course that is suggested by COSCA, academic writing. And you mentioned that it's both suggested on master's and PhD levels. Adam, I would like to turn to you and to ask you about the aim of this course and how do you experience it as a teacher?
Science is content. Communication is more than just the content. It's not difficult to construct a sentence in English if you take a few hours of courses and read a few textbooks. If you pay attention for half of a seminar, you know how to write a sentence. If you pay attention to Netflix for your entire adolescence, you can speak English pretty well. The issue isn't whether people can write as scientists. The issue is, are you communicating as effectively as possible? And it was, Aisha mentioned the humanities. You mentioned the humanities. On the one hand, the humanities is migrating to, you know, we go where there's work. But on the other hand, there's an aesthetic aspect to some parts of writing in the humanities. And when you write in the humanities, you develop tendencies that can be positive or negative. When we teach in these scientific writing courses, we're showing science-based writers how to communicate as was already mentioned, not only to scientists, but to broader audiences. So for example, you're not just writing to other academics in your field. Were you 50 years ago? Maybe. I don't know. I wasn't there 50 years ago. But I do know that today, you're not writing to just people inside the university. You're writing to the corporations outside the university, potential readers outside of university, potential grant providers. You're writing to a global audience and a very highly differentiated audience. If you're only going to focus on content and knowing how to put a subject and verb together into a sentence, well, you've reached the bare minimum of communication. But there are many, many tools in the toolbox of the English language that are partially utilized by the humanities, partially used by other disciplines such as the sciences. And I think it's really important for all of these tools to be integrated together and for us to learn not how to write like poets. The goal is not to write like a poet. The goal is to see what rhetorical devices and punctuation devices and vocabulary decisions can most likely have the greatest impact of a reader with your content, whether that reader is an expert or an amateur. And I think that this course content avoids jargon, avoids simply giving you a rule book and a blueprint, and shows you how one type of sentence construction can have a certain psychological effect on a reader versus another type of sentence construction can have a completely different kind of effect while having the same content. Writing has a subconscious effect. Writing, I don't want to be so soft as to say that it's an art, but if you don't have some art with your content, then your content is not going to travel very far. So I hope that I'm answering your question, but I think the big answer to the question is that this is a science writing based course that is actually quite interdisciplinary because it tries to draw from every resource that's imaginable to show scientists how to get their message out as broadly and effectively as possible.
Very nicely said.
Can I give it like a Yip and Yonica version of the same? Okay. Mm-hmm. We all know the story of the emperor who wore no clothes. An emperor can be an incredibly powerful and competent person, but we cannot just accommodate gaps in how information is communicated. And eventually we are all exposed and all of our deficiencies are exposed if we only accommodate instead of try to rectify things and fix those gaps. It doesn't matter how competent you are, and it doesn't matter how much content you have, unless you have learned how to present your content with the fabric of communication. So the point of this course is to teach people how to weave a appropriate fabric around their content so that it is presented in a way where, you know what, I'm just going to shut up. The analogy is pretty clear. I'll stop at that.
I think in very poor words, if you can't write properly, you won't be read.
Thank you. That's what she said.
Or at least you'll be read with difficulty or resistance. You want to make it as easy as possible on the reader to read you.
Yes, indeed.
So that's what we're trying to help students achieve.
I loved the analogy with the fabric and with presenting your work in that way. Could you provide some insights on the developments of students across the course? Just some highlights, what the students appreciate the most and how they feel that they develop within the course?
Many, many, many students, many writers, specifically writers coming from a non-native perspective with English, have expert-level knowledge of their content, expert-level knowledge of their field. Even at the master's level, compared to the public majority, they're still in the 1%. Very, very high-level experts in content. And yet, they need to find a way to establish their expertise in a language that does not come naturally. This is not to say that a non-native speaks or writes or understands English at a lower level than a native. That's oftentimes the opposite. However, writers who want to establish their expertise often develop tendencies that obscure their content. What I mean is 30-word sentences that have three semicolons and 14 commas and a bunch of words that no one on the street actually uses. I remember a student had a writing passage where he had a word called, the word was expatiate, and I had to look up the word, and I used a program that I found to check word frequency across 200 years of history, and it turned out that this word was being used, I think, one out of every 10 million words in all published English language texts. And I looked up the word on thesaurus.com and saw that the word simply meant to elaborate.
That's great.
And so I went to the student. I spoke to him like in a separate chat room online. I said, "So why did you use this word expatiate?" And he actually got visibly nervous in front of me, and he said, "Well, I used it because I want to be respected."
And I said, "Give the image of a person who knows such."
Well, I said, "Why didn't you just use the word elaborate?" And he said, "I want to be respected by my peers." And that's where we're all at. We want to be respected by the people. We want to fit in. And he did something that everybody does. He tried too hard. I think that this course does a really good job pulling people away from those temptations, away from those tendencies of trying too hard with language. And we kind of give a more streamlined viewpoint of here's how it's possible to write a beautiful English language sentence with no punctuation, without any punctuation except a full stop, and without any obscure vocabulary. There's a certain elegance to it, but you have to be taught how to do that. And most of the time we're taught the opposite thing, which is prove that you're intelligent by writing intelligent looking sentences, but that's actually the opposite of what should be happening for effective writing to occur.
Can I add something? Because I think this ties really nicely to, if we can hazard a definition of intelligence. What is intelligence? The ability to put yourself in the person with whom you're speaking.
Absolutely.
Or that you're writing for, or whomever it is that you communicate with, the ability to, as much as possible, understand their point of view. That could be some form of intelligence, right? Interpersonal intelligence. Mm-hmm. I think one of the strengths of these courses is that it teaches students how to put themselves in the shoes of the reader.
Yep, absolutely.
And that is actually a way in which you can more easily command respect than if you go out of your way and then try to use all these words that, I don't know, maybe Darwin used or and haven't been used anymore since. That is to say that by learning, about readers' expectations and what makes sense in terms of readability flow and so on and so forth, you are making your life easier because you're making the other person, in this case, the reader's life easier. And yeah, that's...
And I don't think the course is attempting to reinvent the English language. Semicolons are pretty. Colons are a really nice decoration to put into a sentence. We don't discourage complexity. I think that we encourage complexity without obscurity.
Yeah. It's not an easy thing to think of your reader and to predict how they will interpret your text and where they will need pauses and where they will need signposts and so on and so forth. This isn't something, easy per se. It's its own level of complexity, if you will.
We got now to such deep levels of complexity of English academic writing, and I really appreciate it because it also links to one of the questions I wanted to ask you. Could you please also elaborate what the students learn in this course in addition to what they can just get from using ChatGPT?
So I have read University of Utrecht's generative AI guidelines, and I think it's interesting whenever AI is referred to only as generative, because something like ChatGPT, yes, in principle, it's generative AI, but that doesn't mean you have to use it strictly in a generative manner. And I usually discuss with the students online and in person, artificial intelligence isn't going away, and it's certainly not going to recede. It's going to get bigger and more pervasive, and it is going to take over more and more things. It is a resource that we cannot ignore. It's also high risk, high reward. And the risks are oftentimes not very clear to people who use AI. I encourage the students to think about AI in terms of something you can use, a resource that you're using for your own self-editing purposes versus generative AI. And by asking AI to make your writing better, you have made your writing worse because now it sounds plastic, fake, and robotic. So there are ways to use generative AI, but it requires you to know what to ask the AI. And so we go over questions, not can you make my writing better? Can you identify areas of my writing that are potentially informal? Can you identify punctuation that is potentially confusing? And by asking AI to identify those things, then you develop your own skill set and then you become a better writer. You're not putting the responsibility on AI. You're not letting AI do your job. You're letting AI help you do your job. And I think that's a really important distinction to make.
So that's the usage of AI in terms of self-education.
Yes.
But can we even trust to the answers which it gives to us on an advice on academic writing?
Plenty of famous people have said something similar to this statement, every tool is a weapon if you hold it right. AI is a tool. It can also be a weapon. And it depends on how you're holding that weapon. I think that this academic writing course does a very good job teaching students how to hold the tool the right way.
Thank you so much for actually going in depth into the mission of the course, the possibilities which it suggests. And now I would like just at the end to turn to the organizational aspects. You already mentioned how long it takes, but maybe you could also mention, you know, all the formalities, how many credits and so on.
Two ECs, 8 weeks long. You find us online.
And these are live sessions with the teachers.
And there are 4 live sessions of 1 hour long where we get to meet each other online and talk about each other's work. And there's a lot of peer feedback that is involved in these sessions.
Adam, how intensive is it for students to follow the course in parallel with their other courses and research which they're doing?
The course is potentially very intense. And I think a lot depends on what the mindset of the student coming is for the student coming into the course. The thing is, there's so much content. And I think that's a positive because you don't want to have a course where you feel like you've figured everything out after the first couple of weeks. What I notice is that students start the course anticipating that it's just another online course, because most online courses are just another online course. But after the first couple of weeks, often students will write me and ask that they'll say, I'm a bit overwhelmed. And I'll think, good. And they'll say, what should I do? And I'll say, well, pick your battles. Because there isn't an expectation for you to do everything perfectly and do everything completely thoroughly. I think the expectation is that you find the areas of content, the parts of content that are going to benefit you the most, and you do your deep dives. Provided that you are coming and attending our online sessions, which oftentimes can be very beneficial because that's your chance to ask really good in-person questions with your instructor, as well as, you know, with the other people on your team. But as the course goes on, there's always another layer to peel back and a deeper way to investigate how sentences work. And what I find is that students by the end of the course are often very thankful because they're given permission to not master everything, and they're encouraged to find the parts of content that are most useful for them. And they will write these very borderline passionately, I mean, we're talking about science, so, but it's borderline passionately thankful messages at the end saying, I can't believe I've learned so much about how to write better sentences, how to write more inviting paragraphs. And it's not because of one thing. It's not because of a specific recipe or a list of boxes to check. It's because we provide so many avenues that students can go down to develop their own personal style that is still going to be useful for the broadest audience possible.
Thank you. I think that sums up the usefulness of the course. Do you have any home take message for the students in general about academic writing and what could inspire them to work on it and to dedicate time to become better writers?
I have 2.
Yes.
The first is a perhaps more selfish one, and that is that by learning how to write better, and I say better because you never stop learning how to write better, you help yourself become also more clear in terms of your own thinking process, in terms of your own research. That's one thing. The second is that I think at its core, writing is an ethical activity. as in it places you in a direct relationship with a reader. And that if you learn how to care for that relationship, then you are also caring for your, yes, way of interacting with the world, and in this case, epistemic communities.
Beautifully said. Thank you. Adam?
Come to this class, even if online, and contribute to the development of the language. Help us evolve it the right way.
Thank you. That's a really big mission, but very inspiring.
Well, I have high expectations for my students. So you come ready or go home.
I would like to thank my guests today and all listeners of the Radio Life Sciences for listening to this episode. You have heard how you can subscribe for this course, and we hope to see you there, and we hope to see you as our listeners at the Radio Life Sciences. Thank you so much, and till the next time.
Thank you, Anastasia.
Thank you for having us. Radio.